This is the Agile Thoughts Podcast, and I'm Lance Kine.
This is Will Iverson with ChangeNode. Go check it out, changenode.com. And I've got a website there where I'm helping folks in the tech industry think about jobs and careers and how to move all that forward. And the YouTube video also covers tech and especially job stuff.
This is the first episode of a series with Will Iverson about tech jobs and IT in the face of AI. Get ready for a sharp and spirited episode of Agile Thoughts. Former CTO and veteran technologist Will Iverson, author of four books and a true software industry insider, joins us to unpack the chaos and opportunity in today's tech job market. With experience spanning Apple, Symantec, startups, and sold ventures, Will brings deep insight and a healthy dose of candor. We will dive into the big question: are software development jobs gone for good or just evolving? Plus, we explore the pivot, what it means for you and your career, and Will's latest obsession, integrating cutting-edge AI tools into real-world development. From job extinction to what he calls the dystopian gap, this one's going to make you think. Hey, Will, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. You know, I just realized something. I think we first met almost 20 years ago. How's that for a mind bender?
Let's see.
Just to get things started.
It might be even a... Yeah, that's probably about right. It was because I was there at Suzy's IQ maybe a year before you, and it would have been a year later because I started in 2003, so that'd be 2004.
Yeah.
So you were the dude who showed up in a suit, and I think... Or a jacket. You had a jacket. I don't want to say a suit. Did you not wear jackets to work in that at the early period?
I don't know. I mean, it was, I started as the practice manager. And so I was kind of like the product manager for consulting. And so part of what's kind of cool is that, you know, and how it kind of relates to this is, you know, we've been in that tech consulting space now for so long. And I mean, that's sort of like a minor one. Like, what do you wear? Like, do you know, right. If you're a consultant and you show up, what do you wear? So if like, right. You know, I this is a sign of how times change. I don't think I would have worn, like a full suit, but no. I do think that it was plausible that I might've worn
a jacket,
you know, sort of like a sport. I think they call them sport jackets, yeah. You know, kind of like a business suit, jackety kind of thing. You know, I always wanted to wear one of those coats with the like leather patches on the elbows. Like
right. A professor's jacket.
Yeah. That's cool. That would've been cool.
Yeah.
It comes up like, you know, when you're a consultant and you do business development, do you wear a suit? Do you wear jeans and a t-shirt? Do you wear a dress shirt? So for a long time there, I was wearing jeans and dress shirts.
That makes sense. I mean, I'm trying to remember, Leonard, Allison would say dress like your client does, but a little bit higher end. Right. So at that point, it just depends on who you're going to meet.
Yeah. And you don't know when you go to meet a client for the first time, you don't know necessarily what you're walking into.
Yeah.
There's like at least one company in Bellevue, which I won't call them out, but they were sort of famous for wearing full blown suit and ties. As far as I know, they still do. It's one of the big logistics companies.
Oh,
and so that was practically if you showed up in a suit, but without a tie, the receptionist would have to, I think, had a bunch of ties hidden behind the desk. So you could borrow a tie for your meeting type stuff. It was crazy.
Out of here. Huh? Yeah. I don't think I know about that. Maybe I've forgotten about that company, but I don't recall that one. Huh? That's a little bonkers. Yeah. And I remember as a developer, I would sometimes wear a jacket into, this is my, so Solutions IQ, I think we can say that name, was my first my first consulting full-time job. And so I actually did dress it up a little bit more just because, well, this is probably what they do at consulting companies. So I better wear a jacket. So I wore a jacket sometimes, which I Allison liked, but then she was like tutoring me on You know, you got to match what your customer does. So for this customer, you probably don't need the jacket, but it's not bad. You know, so anyways,
yep.
A lot of details there.
So I think nowadays you would say it's going to be just jeans and a t-shirt, just about everything, everybody. I mean, that's the default mode for a developer, right?
I'm going to say no, it's not. Yeah? I'm seeing a lot of slacks and short sleeve shirt, collared shirts, polo shirts in the less dressier places. And that's what I'm seeing. Now, of course, that always, your mileage will vary. And maybe I'm thinking of more of the leads than the, say, senior devs or just developers. But no, I've been in a lot of offices now where I'm even wearing a short sleeve shirt would be something I would think twice about, because I'm not sure. If I don't know the client well, you know what I mean? I'm less likely to take that risk, and I'm going to show up with long sleeves. But you're in Seattle. I'm now like all over the place. And so your context may be more Seattle than...
It's definitely skewed towards Seattle. I've been been in this area for 20 years now. So yeah, for sure.
Well, in short, Costco, very much exactly what it's very dressed down, blue jeans. You know, you're almost be considered pretentious if you go too far. Mm-hmm. Smart sheets, they're probably nice. No t-shirts and jeans, but maybe nice shirts. But not necessarily a shirt with a collar. Microsoft, I'm not sure. It's been too long.
So I'm going to throw this out as a thought, okay? You know, the tech market, as we know, is rougher now, right, than definitely. It was years ago. And there's some good charts and data. This is a podcast, so I'm not going to throw a chart up showing some of the evolution where how much the market has grown, but then especially since COVID, now it's shrunk down again a fair amount, and that's proving challenging. Just to sort of as a segue on it, do you think that the changes in the market are going to affect dress and dress code? Like, hey, I'm worried about losing my job, so I might want to dress up a little bit.
I agree. I think that's got to go into people's minds. Because, I mean, that's why consultants try to, like Allison's advice is to dress just a little bit better. She's trying to keep you in the safe spot where you got to look like you're worth the money they're spending on you. Otherwise, why are they spending the money on you? Mm-hmm. And the same thing with a full-time job, you can use that same context. So, yeah, I'm going to say as the market becomes less stable, there's more demands upon you. I'm trying to think of what's another one. Well, the return to office is another situation as well, mm-hmm. where they require at least you may get a job that you can mostly work at from home, but they're going to establish the precedence that they can call you into the office whenever they want. Mm-hmm. And then that's not all jobs, but some jobs, that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, it seems very, very all over the map. And I think it's tricky because you don't necessarily even know when you sign on what you're going to get, right? Like I've got friends. So just to sort of set the stage a little bit, I mean, I have a lot of, so I go for coffees and lunches with a lot of my friends that are devs that are kind of similar to us demographically. And it has gotten to the point now where I'm always concerned if I go out for a coffee or lunch that one of the first things they're going to say is, oh, I got let go or something like that. And there hasn't been a lot of consistency. Like I've got friends that were actually really confident that they were really solid in their job. And, you know, then their company gets, there's like an announcement, their company gets acquired. And then, you know, 3 months later, they're let go. Right. Mm. And what's weird is then I've also got other folks, like one guy said to me, he said, I'm a little worried because I don't think my boss's boss knows what I do or what my group does. You know, and that's not a good place to be, right? But he's been there for years, and you know, apparently over the course of a year that got fixed, and now he's still doing fine. Mm. So it's a little all over the map. Do you feel like you know anybody that got laid off explicitly because of being replaced by AI?
I'm going to say zero. Yeah, I don't know anybody who got laid off because of AI.
Yeah, which is interesting because when we're talking about like what the factors are, the cited reasons for some of the folks that I know that were let go over the last few, especially the last 3-6 months, it was acquisitions. It was the economy's not doing well, right? But not explicitly like...
Maybe here's one. So what do we consider DOGE?
Oh, like federal government?
And their story is about how they're using AI to sort of make things efficient, which, you know, I don't think they're doing that. But
no, I think that the test on it to a certain extent is, well, if you did use AI and automation, what would you see as changes? Yeah. You know, I don't think that the motivations there were genuinely about trying to improve it with AI. The one thing I did hear was some stuff about, oh, we're going to try to modernize some of the systems and maybe AI play a role in that. There's actually a company local here, Kirkland, called TSRI that explicitly does platform modernization work, but they use a tool that's got kind of like a YOMOL modeling tool with a parser and a Lexer and stuff, and it sucks up the app and then it does this translation. They charge by the line, and they pretty much only do federal government work at this point, which I always thought was really interesting that they didn't spread out into doing more commercial work. But they were doing big projects, and they've got a big long list of successful platform modernization work. So, you know, we know what honest, decent platform modernization looks like. You know, it's like you got to keep the existing system running, and then you build the new one, and then you do the cutovers, and you got to slice it and test it and blah, blah, blah. And to say, hey, I'm going to take a state-of-the-art LLM, point it at a giant code base, tell it to go burr, and then have it produce a working, large-scale, million-line-plus app in a few weeks is obviously not credible.
No, it's not. What I see, the scope of AI that I've been very happy with in its performance is I use like one type of test library. The team wants to use this other test library. Tell it to go convert it to the other test library. Nailed it. It can do some refactoring well, and then, but this is hit or miss. And I've seen cases where even after long conversations, like spending a couple hours trying to make it work, it couldn't handle it. Of like, say, converting .NET 48, .NET 4.8 entity objects and converting that code into something that's unit testable. That the code it's generating isn't going to work. Even if you tell it, explain to it the constraints. Sometimes you can get results when you explain to it a little bit where its mistakes are. But in this case, whatever is in that model, it doesn't know how to handle that.
Yeah.
Ace is an agile consultant who shares space with a coffee shop in order to save on the rent. Meet this hard-boiled agile consultant and follow his adventures on helping his clients become agile no matter the circumstance. Scrum Noir, the project management comic book that teaches you agile, is available on Amazon. Just search for Scrum Noir, Noir. We've got more value in the show notes, which have useful links that we discussed or are related to this topic. What are show notes? Show notes show up right in your podcast player for your easy access. If you don't use a podcast player and you downloaded this MP3, go back to the website where you got it and you will see the show notes there. Next episode, more Will Iverson.
And so I will point Claude at a directory that has my app in it, and I'll say, like, let's build a feature. Let's do a thing, right? And, you know, if I had no technical background at all, and especially if it got stuck or wasn't doing anything, it'd be really hard to get it to go in the right direction. And so what I'm trying to work out is, what the heck does this mean economically? You know, like, do you need fewer developers? Do you say that now you can produce apps really fast? Like, there's one vision of this. Like, do you remember microservices and monoliths?
Yeah.
Like, are we going to decompose things into a million little apps or whatever? Right. Well, now imagine if everybody comes into work every day and you have 50 devs and they're all banging out 20 microservices a day or something. Like,